The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 24th, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll have our weekly discussion of the energy market with Mike Wolverton of Kansas State University. In agricultural news, a bipartisan group of farm state senators say the Obama administration should not reopen the farm bill. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will talk with University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good on what to do with new crop corn not covered by crop insurance. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. May wheat, $5.88. The July, $5.99. The May, down 16. The July, down 15 and 3 quarters. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat settled at $5.35, down 14 and a quarter. July, $5.47 and a half, down 14 and a quarter. December, $5.94 and a quarter, down 13 and 3 quarters. May corn settled at $3.93 and 3 quarters, down 1 and 3 quarters. July, $4.04 and a quarter, down 1 and 3 quarters. December, $4.25 and a quarter, down 2. May of 2010, $4.43, down 1 and a half. May crude, $54.05, is up 25 cents. The April ethanol contract settled at $1.60 and 4 tenths, down 4 tenths. The April Arabob at $1.49 and 8 tenths. And it is up 1 cent. May beans, the settlement $9.67, up 11 and a half. July $9.63 and 3 quarters, up 11 and 3 quarters. November $8.96 and a half, up 1. May soybean meal $3.03.30, up 4.90. May soybean oil $33.27, up 17. April live cattle $85.45, down 50. March feeders $94, unchanged. April lean hogs $61.35, up 70 on the day. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City. Let's take a look at the outside markets for you. May crude, $53.98, up 18 on the day. The June, $55.63, down 10. April ethanol, $1.60 and 4 tenths, down 4 tenths. April natural gas, $4.34 and 5 tenths, up 5 and a tenth. The April Arbob, $1.49 and 7 tenths. And it is up 9 tenths. April heating oil, $1.49 and 3 tenths, up 2 and 2 tenths. April propane, $75.42, up 2 and 6 tenths. The May silver contract, $13.35, down 51 cents. And in gold, the May contract, make that the April contract, $9.23.80, down 28.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 77.12 is down 63 points. The NASDAQ at 15.27 is down 28. And the S&P 500 at 8.12 is down 10.16 points. Looking at Mike Sola's extended two-state outlook, he says an active weather pattern will bring periodic chances for precipitation into the region over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Moderate to major flooding will develop in many river basins, while any pre-planning field work will be on hold until a drier weather pattern develops. The heaviest precipitation is expected in far western Illinois and in the Ohio River Valley. Some locations can expect up to 4 inches of rain through the rest of the work week. Temperatures will drop to below average for much of the upcoming week before moderation in early April brings a return of seasonal temperatures. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we had a little pop on the opening bell, a little flurry there. And then for about the rest of the session until the last 15 or 20 minutes, nothing virtually happened. And then a little bit of flurry at the end of the day. So what was going on?
Well, you know, there wasn't a lot of activity in the outside markets other than the gold really here today, Dave. I mean, the dollar up marginally, crude oil, you know, marginally lower, the Dow trading both sides here today. Not a lot of activity that way. We tried to build up a lot of enthusiasm yesterday with the toxic debt bailout program or buyout program or exactly. We think we have an idea how it's going to work, but we're not sure that there's going to be the participants that they were thinking there would. But it did seem to add confidence on Wall Street greatly yesterday, and that, of course, helped our grain markets through most of the day yesterday. And today, you know, it's sort of the aftermath of that, the day after, and we're trying to let it sink in and see how long this might really take and what's happening. And we're biding time until the crop report a week from today, when we should see a lot of answers on what the government sort of feels is going to happen as far as the mix between corn and beans that get planted. And, you know, we've got some wide variances of what the stocks may be being shorter in the beans and what we think they could be, and the acreage for next year may be being higher than a lot of people thought it could be. So that's why we saw the old crop being higher, while the new crop barely eked out a penny gain today in the beans, Dave. And, of course, just a little bit as the crude oil set back just a little bit while we saw the corn market sort of run into resistance in that 4.25 range on the Dease corn.
I guess I would characterize today's market as dull, and I wonder whether or not this is likely to continue into the balance of the week with an idea that most traders probably are already positioned going into next Tuesday.
Well, you know, that is definitely something we're going to keep an eye, number one, on the outside markets. We're going to see how the Dow continues to react this week. But what you're saying is I think this happened a little sooner. We were looking for more a rally into the Wednesday time frame, and then more evening up and people stepping aside or just getting out for the report. But it seemed to happen with the economic news we had yesterday. It seemed to take all of it into effect a day or two earlier than what we thought it might for the week. But very, very choppy trade. We're still getting the feeling that the people in Chicago would like to push this market a little bit to the top side. But we seem to be running out of good fundamental reasoning unless we run into some weather problems. And, of course, as you were talking there with Dave, with the weather forecast that we were talking about, we could start talking a little bit of field work delays, a little planting delays. And, of course, we remember very vividly what happened last year when it got so wet and we couldn't get our corn planted timely in that way. So that could also add just a little bit of a spurt to our corn numbers as we trade here along the way if the weather does continue to look very wet. But as of right now, it still says March on my calendar, and it's not time to worry about wet weather.
But it is planting down south.
And it is planting down south.
And the Delta, we're already hearing that some people are going to have to replant.
That's, you know, we're not hearing, picking up a lot of that, but I'm sure there's areas that as we look, you know, a lot of water coming down, and replanting is, of course, as in the farther south where it was planted and up and looking good, of course, that's the area that you like to get it moving along before it gets too hot out there. They thought they got off to a great start, and if they have to replant now, well, that's going to put them where they're tasseling in some of the bad heat, so that could reduce the yields from the south, too.
Did we hear that Brock was recommending some sales today?
Yeah, he sold 10% in the cash market in 2009 corn and beans and wheat. So he did say it was time to reward this rally that come along with a little bit of cash sales.
And so he has about 5% cash sales above his CRC still to go, I guess.
There you go.
At what level, if we get favorable numbers and we continue to rally this market post-Tuesday, at what numbers would you want to reward the market?
Well, I think, you know, basically along the way when we talked over at the Beef House, this 4.25 range was our first range to do a little pricing. And so, you know, we, along in the same respect, rewarded the market a little bit here. I think our next goal is up in the 440 to 455 bracket as far as the corn goes, Dave. And as far as the beans, you know, we got over $9 last night. That was our first target. Really, our next the target we would really like to have for another increment is probably 925 to the 950 bracket, somewhere in that range, depending on how you feel and how aggressive you want to be, Dave.
Is the $10 bracket a pretty stout resistance at this point in your mindset?
It is in my mindset. You know, we'll see how the government looks at this or that or whatever they go along, but as far as we're looking at, if we see the bean acreage that we're forecasting or looking towards, why I would have to say that $10 seems to not be in the cards unless we have some weather problems.
What kind of yield do you want to put on these beans? It's pretty tricky because a lot of the beans that the extra beans we're talking about will be in a little bit more marginal land.
We will be having some more beans down in the Mid-South. You know, we have some heat problems. We maybe have, if it's dry land beans and not irrigated, some problems along those lines. And we're talking about coming back into some of the acres that switch back that would be a little more marginal. But, I don't know what number to really throw on them yet, Dave. But we would probably have to, with the lateness of last year, though, I don't think we would still be a little closer to trend line yields than we were at that.
So better than last year at 39.6, you're saying, for sure.
I would say, mm-hmm. You're probably in the 41 bushel bracket.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thank you, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, a bipartisan group of senators sent a letter yesterday to leaders on the Senate Budget Committee opposing efforts in President Barack Obama's proposed budget to cut agricultural spending. The 17 senators wrote that efforts to cut $16 billion in ag spending over 10 years would come at the expense of several carefully crafted and agreed-upon programs that make up our federal farm safety net. The senators asked Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad and Ranking Member Judd Gregg to not reopen the 2008 Farm Bill. Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says that China is likely to remain the best-performing economy among major emerging markets. In OECD's definition, a major emerging economy is one that has achieved annual economic growth of more than 7% for at least 25 years. Only six countries meet this definition: Brazil, China, India, Indonesia, Russia, and South Africa. According to the report, China has used open trading as a key ingredient in its successful policy mix and, in fact, has been notable for its market-oriented approach. OEDC says these steps make China's prospects much more sustainable in simultaneously addressing poverty and economic efficiency issues. Gary Gensler's nomination to oversee the Commodity Futures Trading Commission may rest on whether enough senators back him to override holds on his nomination. Senator Bernie Sanders placed a hold on the nomination on Friday. Sanders said in an email that Gensler worked to exempt credit default swaps from regulation, which led to the collapse of AIG and has resulted in the largest taxpayer bailout in U.S. history. And he says that Gensler worked to deregulate electronic energy trading, which led to the downfall of Enron and the spike in energy prices. A spokesperson for the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, said yesterday the White House is trying to deal with the objections. The Senate Agriculture Committee unanimously approved Gensler's nomination last week. Argentine farmers refused to sell their grain and livestock yesterday in a strike aimed at pressuring the government and Congress to cut export taxes on soybeans, the country's top crop. Television showed farmers and truckers arguing at some makeshift checkpoints set up along highways, with truckers pleading to be allowed to pass. Farm leaders called the commercial strike for 7 days through Friday, March 27th. China is calling for a new global currency controlled by the International Monetary Fund, stepping up pressure ahead of a London summit of global leaders for changes to a financial system dominated by the U.S. dollar and Western governments. The comments, in an essay by the Chinese central bank governor released late yesterday, reflects Beijing's growing assertiveness in economic affairs. China is expected to press for developing countries to have a bigger say in finance when leaders of the group of 20 major economies meet April 2nd in London to discuss the global crisis. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Federal crop insurance has put a floor under the price of corn for many farmers. Now it is up to them to decipher how much of their crop is not covered and when to market it. Todd Gleason has more.
Federal crop insurance, if taken at the 85% level under the CRC program, covers, prices out, about 75% of most corn farmers' expected yield. I spoke with U of I Extension Ag economist Daryl Good about what this means for marketing new crop corn this spring. We'll start by hearing how to arrive at that 75% covered level.
So just to clarify for myself, and I'm going to round the number up to 200 because it's easier to work with for bushels per acre as opposed to 190. 15% of the crop at 85% CRC is not covered automatically on your APH. And then you've got to work with the 200 bushels, and that's extra 10% of the crop. So you've got, so roughly speaking, you've got 25% of the crop that's not priced.
No, I think that's the right way to think about it. You say, I can't do the math in my head, but if I had an APH of 170, then I've got 85% of that insured, however many bushels that is.
Right.
If my expected yield is 200, then the difference between those two is really the bushels that I don't have insured. Is the way I think about it.
Right, and that's what I was thinking. Well, my math may be wrong. I was thinking it would be about 25% of the crop.
Yeah, it's in that neighborhood, certainly. Right.
So then you've got 25% of the crop, but at this early stage in the game, that would be all of the crop that, I mean, you've got 75% of your crop covered at some price, and relatively speaking, you never sell that much of your crop this early.
No, I think that's right, and what is troublesome occasionally, as you hear folks say, now that you have your insurance in place, you can be real aggressive marketing your crop. Well, that's true to some extent because if you do, quote, oversell, then you have potential insurance indemnities that will offset that. But we've got to be careful about at what price level we become aggressive. In my mind, it's like in the old days, we say, this early in the season, do I want to sell at prices below the loan rate? Probably not. And the same way with insurance, do I want to be real aggressive when the market is below my insurance price? Probably not. So I think just to say automatically now get real aggressive marketing, we have to condition that by saying at what price level are we talking about here? I would want to be well above my insurance price before I got real aggressive marketing the crop.
Daryl Good would consider marketing new crop corn when December futures approach $4.50 a bushel. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Joining us now with our weekly look at energies is Mike Wolverton of Kansas State University. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, Dave.
Understand that this might be your last broadcast for us?
Yes, I'm moving on to other things, and there'll be another person to fill in.
Dan O'Brien, I believe.
Yeah, Dan's a good man. He and I have been working together on some research projects, and actually he knows a whole lot more about cellulosic ethanol than anyone else I know.
Well, that'll be grand, and we want to thank you for your, well, it's been about a year of service, I think.
It has. It's been fun.
Well, let's go ahead and look at the ethanol market. There's been lots of talk out of Washington pushing for a change in the ethanol blend, 12, 13, 14%, all been discussed. What might that mean for corn?
Well, I think the talk is pretty serious out of Washington, and the first good analysis I've seen came from the Mississippi State University this week. Authors are Anderson, Petrola, and Riley, and they tried to take a look at how much corn it would take if we increased the blend rates by various amounts, and the amounts are pretty astonishing. Right now, we're on track to use 10.5 billion gallons of ethanol next year, which will take 3.8 or 3.9 billion bushels of corn. And we can handle that just fine, I think. But when you bump up that blend rate to 12.5% or 15%, then we start looking at some really large quantities of corn. And when we think what that might do to the corn market, then people could it could have an adverse effect, particularly on livestock producers.
How much infrastructure would we have to build to meet those mandates?
Well, we can produce that much corn, but I think what people are putting the cart ahead of the horse here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see those mandates increase right now. What I've heard recently is that we may go up to maybe 12% this year, but I think if the ethanol industry is still stressed for profits, and they are right now, and it looks like we're going to have a big enough corn crop to meet all the needs, then I think we might see the EPA increase that mandate. If we have a drop in corn acres, which some people are predicting, or if we have a bad weather situation, I don't think they'll increase the mandate this year.
What about on the demand side? What if the second half of 2009 is bad because of livestock and the exports continue to lag?
Well, I've done a demand-based analysis here, and it looks to me like we're going to need more corn acres than most people are estimating right now. We're going to find out next week on Tuesday when the USDA releases that planting intentions report to see what their numbers are saying. But I've seen estimates from 82 million acres to 86 million acres, which is what we planted last year. My numbers show we need at least 87 million acres of corn, so we might get in a short situation here. And so I think people in Washington may rethink this increasing this mandate because of that.
And that would be ending stocks in, 700 million bushels?
It would take them down pretty low enough that they would be critical and we'd see corn prices spike up quite a bit.
What else are you seeing in your studies?
Well, I'm looking at the ethanol profitability situation, and they're still not in very good shape, although better than we had planned earlier. The USDA kept the corn usage for ethanol production, actually increased it to 3.7 billion bushels, which indicates to me that they think the ethanol industry is going to be looking at better times ahead. And when we look at the oil futures prices, they may be right about that. We're seeing oil prices increase as we go into the latter part of 09.
Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mike Wolverton, and he is an energy analyst at Kansas State University. In 2 minutes, we'll talk to Don Day about the agricultural weather, and we'll be back then. It's National Chocolate-Covered Raisins Day. Historians say somewhere around 1000 BC, the first vineyards for raisins were established in Persia. Trade routes brought raisins to Greece and Rome, where they were eaten in large quantities. But it was not until the 11th century that raisins made a splash in Europe, when knights returning from the Crusades brought raisins home with them. By the way, it takes 4 tons of grapes to make 1 ton of raisins. On this day in agricultural history in 1765, the British Parliament passed the Quartering Act, which required American colonists to provide temporary quarters, food, alcohol, fire, candles, vinegar, salt, bedding, and utensils to British troops stationed in their towns in times of peace. The act was circumvented in all colonies other than Pennsylvania. In 1802, a patent was issued for the first full-sized road locomotive. It traveled in South Wales over 9 miles at a speed of 5 miles per hour, and it could pull a 10-ton load, 5 wagons and 70 men. In 1896, Clement Hardy received a patent for the rotary disc plow. His patent described a rotary disc plow constructed with one or more plowing discs arranged diagonally to the line of draft and supported by furrow and land side wheels and a suitable metal or wooden frame. In 1989, on this date, the worst oil spill in U.S. history occurred as the Exxon Valdez ran aground in Alaska's Prime William Sound and eventually leaked 11 million gallons of crude oil. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
We had some rain yesterday, and it looks like more on the way this week.
Boy, it certainly is looking that way. It looks like the phrase, marching like a lamb, out like a lion, might really come true this season, as most of the nation, especially east of the Rockies, to the Corn Belt Midwest, and all the way to the East Coast is going to be quite stormy for the last 7 days of March and into the first week of April.
So it sounds to me like possible flooding is in line for some areas.
Without a doubt. I think that is going to be a really big concern heading on into the next couple of weeks and probably right on into the start of the growing season. This is not unlike what happened a year ago. And there's some analogy in terms of the way the weather patterns are behaving. And last year, we had a weak La Nina in the Pacific, and it has made a comeback. We are in a weak La Nina again, and we're probably going to end up with similar weather patterns. Now, there is some good news for folks that do want the moisture. The southern plains, portions of Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, which are very, very dry, may have their best chance of significant moisture a long time over the next week or two.
The northwestern Corn Belt is going to be a little saturated, it looks like.
It is certainly looking to be the case. And that will be true all the way up into the upper Red River Valley area and those locations, as the storms that are going to be coming off the Pacific are going to take a track at a fairly low latitude across the south central and central and southern plains. And that's going to give the ability of these storms to draw into some Gulf of Mexico moisture and lift it northward. So these systems are going to be quite dynamic and will have the potential to produce a lot of rain.
Last year, we definitely trended wetter in the spring. Are we at that point now where you would say we're trending wetter, or are we in a more normal pattern and the ground just happens to be pretty saturated?
Well, I think it may be the truth may be somewhere in between there. We're certainly seeing a more active wet weather pattern, but we should as we get into late March, April, and into May. We usually do see precipitation spike up. But with the wet soil conditions and due to the fact that we do have upper-level patterns similar to last year, the trend does look like it may be a bit wetter.
Down in the Delta, it appears that some corn that's already been planted might have to be planted again.
Yeah, and that's going to be a concern, as these systems that are going to be producing the rain will cover a lot of real estate.
Where else are you keeping an eye on these days?
Well, if we were to go, I know that south of the equator, things are wrapping up, but it is still dry in many areas of Brazil and areas of Argentina, and they're going to continue that trend into the end, the complete end of the growing season. If we are going over to China, taking a look at conditions over there, there's been some dry parts of China recently, although the forecast for China, Eastern Asia, is looking a little more moist.
And I guess in Australia, it's soon to be planting season for autumn wheat, and it's dry there.
It is dry there. Now, there's been some moisture in some of the eastern growing areas, and there might be some more, but dryness still prevailing there.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.